If you've been on social media lately, you might have seen some conservatives arguing that the United States is not a democracy, but a republic. Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee recently tweeted, "Democracy isn't the objective. Liberty, peace, and prosperity are. We want the human condition to flourish. Ranked democracy can thwart that." Since the election, this anti-democracy refrain has picked up steam, with everyone from Donald Trump Jr. to Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida floating the idea that GOP-led legislatures in states like Pennsylvania and Arizona could instate electors willing to cast their ballots for Donald Trump when they vote in December. To gain a better understanding, we have with us George Thomas, a political science professor at Claremont McKenna College. Professor, welcome to Here and Now.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, we should note that so far, GOP lawmakers in Arizona and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin have all said they will not be intervening in the Electoral College process, meaning the electors will cast their votes for the candidate who won in their state. But what do you make of the fact that this idea has gained so much traction, this idea of overriding the will of the people in service to some other ideal?
Yeah, it's actually really surprising in that when you think of directly overturning, you know, a democratic election in the states, Republicans have gone farther than just saying we're, you know, a republic, we're not a democracy. They are actively seeking to overturn the very clear will of the voters. And so it's a really dangerous moment, I think, and dangerous because it is sowing the seeds of distrust for the democratic form of government.
In the days after the election, President-elect Biden tweeted, "No one is going to take our democracy away from us, not now, not ever." And then conservative talk show host Andrew Wilco responded by saying, "Not to worry, since we are a republic." I mean, does it surprise you to see how fast some on the right were ready to actually toss out the word democracy, like it was never part of our regular discourse?
Yeah, and it's really at odds with what Republicans themselves have been saying two decades before this when you think about the courts. I mean, they've been saying that the courts are problematic because they overturned the democratic will of the people. And yet here is an instance where the democratic will of the people is quite clear within the various states, and yet they're actually wanting courts with no evidence and without law on their side to overturn, you know, what's a clear majority vote on behalf of the people. And, you know, what's really problematic, I think, from the Republican perspective, is they're distorting our constitutional understandings, right? So, I mean, there is this idea that, you know, we are a republic in many ways. That is, we don't just have simple majority rule. That part of it's true. But where they're going much farther than that is they're actually wanting to empower minority rule. I mean, it's not just a matter of theory that this is a republic of democracy, but if they would act on this at this moment, it would, you know, be a very clear rejection of a popular vote within the states for the presidency. And we've never had anything like that.
Can I have you, before we go any further, get our definition straight on what's the difference between a democracy and a republic, and what is the most accurate way to talk about the system of government that we currently have?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And one easy way to think of it is when we say democracy today or when we say republic today, we basically mean those terms sort of interchangeably in, you know, popular discourse up to, you know, a couple of years ago, really. But when you turn to founding thought, the framers during the, you know, the framing of the Constitution, they distinguished between a republic and a democracy. Both were forms of popular government. But democracy for them mostly meant pure democracy. That is, there were no representatives. You had, you know, the simple majority will of the people. There weren't things like rights. There weren't checks and balances in the system. And that's really what they meant by a democracy. But when they turned to a republic, they clearly meant that this would be popular government, government rooted in the will of the people, but that will of the people could be refined over time and by way of institutions, so it wouldn't be an immediate will. And over time, right, we came to use those terms more or less interchangeably. And so when Republicans now are trying to say, wait, we're actually not a democracy, we're a republic, I think what they're attempting to do is to actually justify and empower minority rule. And there's nothing in the Constitution that would support that.
You know, we see this argument pop up from time to time, frequently when white people are afraid of losing power. I'm thinking about 1957 when Congress was debating the Civil Rights Act, and William Buckley, the founder of the National Review, wrote this editorial called "Why the South Must Prevail." And he was essentially saying, If black people are able to vote freely, they'll drag society back 1,000 years. Therefore, it's okay to ignore majority rule. Can you compare that argument to what is going on in the South politically right now?
I think there are similarities in Buckley and others at the time, you know, kind of defenders of states' rights. When they were saying we're a, you know, republic, not a democracy, they were offering using it as cover to suppress black votes, to not extend the vote, to argue against something like the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And just kind of one historical irony here. Remember, Republicans were like huge supporters of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 at the time. And so that's really shifted. But, you know, there are similarities. And you see that when you talk about the populace and Republicans are, you know, talking about who the people really are, there's often language from them that suggests, right, we're really not talking about all of the people. That is, you know, we would exclude certain minorities, usually along racial lines. And you saw a little bit of that, for instance, when Kamala Harris was put forward as the vice presidential nominee, and some on the right were saying, well, wait, is she even a natural-born citizen, which is just preposterous. She was clearly a natural-born citizen under the 14th Amendment. But, you know, the idea was, we are kind of skeptical of whether or not she's a citizen. And you saw this, for instance, in Texas, where the governor of Texas is trying to, in some sense, by arranging ballot drops boxes by county, trying to limit the number of votes you might be getting from minority cities where the population is majority-minority. And so you certainly see strands of that in the Republican Party today.
What about in 2016? There actually was a question then whether some so-called faithless electors would defy their pledges and actually vote for Hillary Clinton since she did win the popular vote. Did that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. There were a couple of faithless electors, and there were those on the left who were insisting that if you think of the Electoral College as it was originally designed, people would be voting for who they thought would be the best president, right? And the idea originally with the Electoral College is it would filter out demagogues was the real hope. But I think the argument in 2016, and I actually had a few colleagues occasionally making it, I think it was disingenuous then, and it would be now as well, because we're just too far past that era. The Electoral College might have functioned that way in 1796 and in 1800. But for, over a century, we've really thought that the Electoral College, effectively just translates the popular vote of the states into electoral votes. And I think that that's an understanding that the American people, by and large, agree with. And state law, in most cases, commands that.
Mm-hmm. And a note, none of the 7 faithless electors that year voted for Hillary Clinton.
No, they didn't vote for Trump.
That's right. We had Stuart Stevens on the show recently, Lincoln Project member and author of the book, It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. He actually predicted that in 2030, it will be Republicans, ironically, calling to abolish the Electoral College. They simply won't be able to win because white voters who make up the party's base will no longer be the majority. Do you think that's right?
I mean, that may be too bold a prediction, but I think the point on the whole is right in that, how our institutions function can, favor a particular party at a particular moment in time, and kind of trying to game, whether that will always be true is that's the difficult business. And so right now, Republicans clearly benefit from the Electoral College, and it clearly empowers small red states in ways where they have a disproportionate say on who's elected president. I mean, you're right, it's no coincidence that when you think of presidential elections from, I want to say, since 1996, only one Republican president has clearly won the popular vote, and otherwise they've prevailed by way of electoral votes. And that's likely to change over time, right, with changing demographics. And so that's one of the reasons I think the Republicans are really playing with fire. I mean, to try to delegitimize a free and fair election could have serious consequences down the road for them.
George Thomas is a political science professor at Claremont McKenna College. Professor, thank you so much for this conversation.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.